Hi, I'm Bunny Guinness, and this is my podcast, Bunny in the Garden, with someone special. Someone who is well known for something other than their green fingers, but who is also a mustard-keen gardener. I'll discover them through their garden, why, how, and when they garden, the best tips they've learnt, and their gardening style and approach. Today, I'm delighted to be in the garden with Nikki Haslam, the celebrated interior designer and socialite. Nikki has packed a lot into his frenetic 85 years, from breeding and showing Arabian horses in Arizona, to being a photographer, gossip columnist, author, contributor to Tatler, and he worked for British Vogue. He was also a shop owner with his Nikki Haslam shop in London, and he's been a cabaret singer and sometime raconteur. It's amazing. Is 85 the new 60?
Well, I'm lucky that I seem to treat 85 as if I was 14. but I'm not falling to bits yet.
So it's the mindset, isn't it?
It's the mindset, yes. And also, as Gertrude Stein said, il faut être moderne, one must be modern. And it's keeping up with the times that keeps one youngish, I think.
So it's not trivial at all, no. Really, is it? Because it's making you be up and out there. And I remember that you mentioned that when you first visited Heathrow, it was just a few Nissen huts in the field.
It was, absolutely. When I was young, we flew from Northolt.
Yes. That's
where, that was the main airport.
It's extraordinary.
And I first went to America with my mother in 53, the year of the coronation. We went from Heathrow, and it was literally Nissen huts in a field.
And that really makes you think how life has changed in that time, doesn't it? Massively so. But are you still working now? Because working, I think, is the thing that really keeps you young.
Yes, I work. I do a bit of decorating for friends that I've worked for a lot before, and I want something redone, or I work for children of clients or grandchildren of clients now these days, which is quite nice.
Yeah, I've done three generations for a few clients, and it's lovely, isn't it? You've got a real bond with the family. So your memoir is astonishing. I have to say your turn of phrase is fantastic.
That's You're a
very,
kind of you.
Very good writer. And I would say slightly appalled, but you might not say so, that you were schooled to get into Eton because you had 3 years with polio where you lost school completely in really important years of your life when you were sort of, was it 6 to 9 or something?
Yeah, I first went to school when I was 11.
Yeah. And that is a bit of a disadvantage, to put it mildly. So they got a tutor
in. That's why I was at the bottom of the class at Eton for quite a long time.
And that's why your parents got you in a tutor to get you into the common entrance for Eton. But he schooled you in other things apart from Scholastic.
He was a cousin of ours. He was called Richard Hughes Hallett. And he was wonderful looking. And how my parents didn't know he was gay, I can't imagine. I don't think they minded, really, but he was absolutely wonderful looking, very, very nice, and he just put me in his arms, and he didn't have anything nasty, just sort of cuddled me and held me and told me I was wonderful, and that, I'd never had that before in my life. So one's parents weren't very feely-touchy, were they, in those days, and it was the first sort of human contact that I'd ever had, and it was just marvellous.
Right. And do you think that was forming in your relationships? Because you mentioned, really, that a lot of your relationships were with older people because you didn't go to school for long, and so you felt more at ease with an older generation then.
Yeah, exactly. I love old people. They're fascinating. I love what their memories are. And people like Diana Cooper were so full of information and knowledge and wit and poetry and... I mean, Diana knew every Greek legend, you know, things like that. She was unschooled, completely unschooled too. And she knew everything.
Oh, I was interested that you mentioned Diana Cooper because I have never met her, but I'd always heard of her, highly charismatic. A socialite, would you say?
She was deeply social. She knew everybody.
Yes.
But she wasn't... She was a socialite in the sense of going to every party and everything, but she did go to every party. It's not that's wrong. She did. She loved parties and she was very good at them. But socialite's a very odd word. It implies sort of glossiness.
Well, I did wonder whether you thought it would be derogatory. Would you say it is a derogatory term
slightly,
or not?
Slightly.
Yeah, I'm never quite sure. I think some people would see it as amazing.
Yeah.
And some people would say, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what I loved was your description of Diana Cooper, because I'd always thought of her, having never met her, as the most glamorous thing on earth. And you said she had an ungainly duck-like walk, as though her legs were too far apart. Little dress sense, preferring the frankly frumpish, wore a large felt hat as time under the dryer was wasted.
Exactly.
And that is a totally different side of her. So she.
And that, sometimes the hat had some curls attached to it.
But she was glamorous, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can still be that, even
and
if you're dressed.
One day we went down to John Aspinall's to see the apes, and Diana was wearing a big felt hat, a great big covering her eyes. And one of the apes pulled it off, and she was bald underneath. She hadn't put her wig on.
Oh, my God.
Well, not quite a wig, but she hadn't put her curls.
Oh, wow. Gosh. But, so, you are mainly known, would you say, for your interior design? I would say
yes,
so.
Yes, I
think
so.
That's really what put you on the map.
Well, I wish I was known for my writing, really. I much prefer being thought of as a writer.
Well, I hope you're still doing it now. There's
yeah,
still
I do.
Time, Nicky,
yeah.
For heaven's
well,
sake. Don't
I do
hang
a lot.
Around.
I do a lot.
Yes, and I'm sure you find it easier and better as your recollections are fuller and longer and you develop an ease with your style.
Yes, I do. And I've got very nice editors who let me sort of go on a riff that's not quite the same as what the subject really is. They let me, I mean, Harry Mount, the oldie, always says, just put your memories into the review too. Bring in real people, bring in different situations. Don't just review the book.
Yes.
Sort of bring yourself into it, which is a very encouraging way of writing.
And then do they edit it or you don't let them edit it?
Well, I try and make sure they don't edit it badly, but sometimes they do. I mean, everybody does tend to think they've got better. I mean, nothing worse than subs.
Yeah.
Oh, they're a nightmare.
I know, and if you don't...
They don't know anything. Yeah, they're all too young. They don't know anything. They don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I've had some amazing sub-editors make some amazingly glaring, change meaning and everything.
Absolutely.
And you think, what?
Yeah.
But, no, it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
But what I think my introduction doesn't show, which I think you are, and people might not realise, is that you are a very generous individual. Without exception, everyone who has worked for you, and I've mentioned your name, they absolutely sing your praises and say how you help them. Sophie Conran, Kath Kidson, people like that. So you really help them with your career. And people might not know that, but to
William
have...
William Yeoward, he worked for
oh,
me.
Oh, did William Yeoward?
He worked for me.
Oh,
Kirsty
really?
Kirsty Allsop.
Really?
Anish Kapoor used to make my furniture.
Wow. And so you met them when you interviewed them, and then you saw something in them, or you
I met them at
well,
a party and
a
thought they were fun. The only point of staff is they're pretty. You have to have good-looking people around you. You can't work with anything but beautiful people.
Oh, I mean, Nicky, I better leave now. My God, I can't believe you said that.
Well, you know what I mean. I can train people to be interior designers in half an hour flat. I can't train them to be beautiful.
But don't you think that beauty now has changed so much? So some of the people who have really extraordinary faces, whereas maybe 50 years ago the beauty was, everyone would agree on. Now,
yes.
I think so much is in the expression,
exactly.
The way they dress, the
exactly.
whole person.
Yeah.
I think you could make anyone beautiful
well,
if you wanted to.
I try. I don't need to, present company included.
Fair enough. Oh, I don't believe that. But anyway, but that is interesting because I remember someone saying that to me. I won't mention his name. And say he went to a wedding of a very well-known aristocratic couple. And he said, I couldn't believe there were just no good-looking women there. And I thought, what a thing to say about this wedding, because I thought they were hugely glamorous.
But, yeah, well, of course, beauty is in the eye of, as we know.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So you don't really like being referred to as a socialite. You do think it's a bit of a two-edged sword.
Slightly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people think I'm just rushing around being a socialite, but I'm not. I'm rather choosy at what I do.
Well, I was going to say that. So I imagine you are always up and at it in terms of socialising. So do you ever think on a Saturday night, Friday night, oh, my God, I don't want to have to go to Lord and Lady
every
so-and-so.
Night, every time I've owned in council. It happens every night.
You are joking. Yeah,
always.
What percentage
so
of time
much rather
do you
go to bed with a cheese sandwich?
And you what know, percentage do you bin at the last minute?
I don't bin. It's very rude to bin.
Oh,
if you,
you
said
are
you'll
good.
Go, I might chuck 3 or 4 days in advance, but I'd never do it last minute. I guess incredibly rude.
Right, I'm so glad you said that, because when my husband, who is the most, he just does like his own company and a few close people around him. But every time we're going out, as we get nearer and nearer the front door, I almost have to have a cattle prod to push him down the last 5 or 10 yards. But actually, when he's been there and had the evening, he loves it.
Exactly.
But it's that sort of, I can't believe you feel like that too.
Always.
Oh, Nicky, that makes me feel so much better.
I sort of dread new people. To the end, everybody has something interesting about them.
I read that you said that
somewhere. If you dig enough, you get fascinating things out of them.
So even if they're Joe Bloggs, who was, let's be thoroughly snobbish, not well connected, and he didn't do a glitzy job, you would still find something. I totally agree, but I'm amazed you said that.
And people say they're frightful bores. Well, bores can be rather interesting for being boring. You can find something fascinating even in a bore.
And I do think it's a bit of a reflection on the person who's talking to the bore that finds them a bore.
Yeah.
That they too perhaps are a bore.
Yeah, of course,
I don't know.
Yeah. Or they just don't want to explore any subject rather than did you come by train or whatever. Was the traffic bad? Who knows? Or how many children have you got? Or which school do they go to?
And that brings it on to another remark on your tea towel. I think you said you hate people who hate conversation as opposed to discussion.
Yes.
Which implies that you don't
want
to... Was that what... Have I quoted you incorrectly?
I love conversation. But I think nowadays conversations are called something quite different. The press always uses it. We must have a... We say about meetings or about Rishi Sunak meeting Netanyahu. They had a conversation. They didn't. They had a meeting. It's a different thing. Conversation is quite a different thing to meetings or discussions. Conversation is ping pong. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Nothing of import passing,
well,
would you
it
say,
can
or
be
not
important.
Necessarily?
It can be important, but you have to have people bounce it back to you so you can.
Yeah. Yes, okay.
Make the witticisms if necessary.
Right. But you would prefer an in-depth, meaty discussion?
No, I prefer... it depends where we are. I mean, okay. I call this a discussion, in a sense.
Right. Okay, we'll see what you say at the end of it, Nicky. You might disagree. Okay, so I love it that when you're at school, at Eton, you had a picture that was exhibited at the Trafford Gallery.
Yes.
And you were photographed in the press. And I think you said something like, this was your first taste of fame.
Yeah.
The canker had got the rose.
Exactly.
Now, I thought, what amazing, because you're implying that fame is evil, in a way. Canker is something that is catching, and you don't want. But you like fame. Come
well,
on, be honest.
Well, I don't think I like fame, because it can get... I mean, true fame would be quite difficult to deal with.
When you say true fame, you mean someone totally in color, like Princess Catherine.
Or Harry Styles or whatever.
Yes.
But I think being sort of connu, recognised for what you are, rather than being recognised from photographs. Actually, that happens sometimes. It's rather gratifying when people are not one in the street.
When it's once or twice, it's fine. I imagine if it's 50 times an hour, you would find it a
exactly.
Bit
that's the difference. You've got it.
Yes, right. So, but it is funny, isn't it? Because I find with this generation, the current whatever they are, generation whatevers.
Yeah.
What are we?
Double X. Or
Double
whatever.
X or whatever you are. I think for them, fame is like right at the top of the thing, isn't it? It's gone meteoric now, as people want.
They
want
sort
to
of have to be famous.
Absolutely.
You have to be. You? Mm. You achieve fame rather than aim for it, I think.
Yes.
You achieve. You deserve it.
When you've worked for
when
it.
When you've got something worth being famous for.
Yeah, yeah. And what I also liked from your Eton years was your study. You don't call them studies at Eton. They have a sort of code
room,
word.
Just call it room.
Or rooms or whatever it was. But the way you decorated yours, and you said you wanted to make your Eton life as sophisticated as your London life. And so you had faux ocelot skin for the curtains.
Yep.
You cut paper ostrich plume pelmets.
Yes.
You had a carpet of artificial grass, which you blagged from the local greengrocer.
Yeah. The barrows in Belgrave Square. Remember the flower barrows?
Yeah, yes.
I got it from him.
Right. And then you had a huge photo of James Dean, and it was all lit by carriage lamps.
Yeah.
And your housemaster used to take people who came to dine with him after dinner to show them your room.
Yes, like a sort of cabaret.
Yeah. And it was amazing. And now, looking back on that, you realise that was perhaps the way you were going to go, and that was the first taste of interiors?
Well, I was very lucky, because I'd really met really almost the time I went to Eton, but certainly by the third or second year, people like Oliver Messel and Cecil Beaton, because they were friends of friends.
Yes.
And I was already sort of imbued in that whole world of decor.
And they would have been older than you.
Oh, God.
Way older, wouldn't they?
Cecil was a million years older than me.
But I mean,
he was wonderful.
Nikki, everybody finds it difficult to find out what they want to do in life. Do you think if having had that huge success, really, with your bedroom at Eton, that you'd gone straight into interiors, you would have been better? Or are you glad you had that very rich background?
Well, there was quite a long time before I did go to interiors. I mean, I worked on, as you said, British Vogue for a year or so. And then I went to America. And I worked on American Vogue with Diana Vreeland for 4 years. And then I had my own magazine, or another, I was art director of a magazine. And then I worked in Hollywood in the films. So I had 10 years in Arizona, cowboy life. So I had sort of 10 years of discovering various professions.
And you did initially apply... following on the footsteps of Min Hogg for the Central School of Art and Costume
I was turned
Design.
Down flat.
Yeah.
I did some hideous costumes. I can see them now. They're so awful.
But looking at you now, I do wonder whether you could have pursued that line and enjoyed it. Do you think?
I think at one point I wanted to be a fashion designer.
Yeah,
couturier.
I was thinking that. Yeah.
That's why I did costumes. But It was because it was a lot of my friends were fashion designers then. It was sort of fun fashion.
But you would have been good at it.
Yeah, quite. Yes, I probably could have been.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot about the history of fashion, mainly through people like Diana Vreeland who taught me.
But also the way you look now, I have to say, you do look amazing. I particularly love your hairstyle.
Thank you.
And so you've got this lovely... Why is it that you decided to go bi-tone?
Because I'd always done silly things with my hair. At one point, I was completely black years ago. It was my Liam Gallagher moment. But then it's gone white as I got. And it's just pure white. I hate white hair. I think it's so awful aging and horrid.
Oh, I think it's distinguishing. But anyway,
I hate being distinguished.
Oh, okay.
It's the one thing I don't want to be.
Oh, right. You think it's aging?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So,
distinguished. So common to be distinguished.
Knuckles rat bunny. Yep.
But then somebody, a friend of mine, said, you cannot have all white hair. You must put some streaks in it.
Yeah.
So I tried doing it. Then I thought, well, why not have the, like what's she called? Daphne Guinness. Have a sort of... So I experimented with putting some dark streaks in. And I thought, I can't go to a hairdresser. It'll cost so much money. And I have to have it done all the time. I'll see how I can do it myself. And I just used eyelash dye. And I do
so
it now
amazing.
Once every 3 weeks or something with them.
And then you can vary it with your mood. You can do more or
exactly.
less and play with it.
Yeah.
It's most effective. Well, that's my top 10 tip, not for gardening, but for hair colouring.
Oh, gardening.
You'll see everyone changing now, Nikki. But this whole thing about your success, I mean, you are a superb communicator. You get on with everybody. Everybody likes you. And
that's a relief.
Well, it is, isn't it? It's a huge asset in life, isn't it? And at what point did you twig that you had this ability to communicate and get on with people?
I think it's really being brought up with older people. I was made to talk proper sense, not talk baby talk. But being with Polly, I was only with people that saw me were real proper grown-ups. I didn't have any children to play with. I didn't know any children. And when I went to school, these ghastly little boys picked their nose and farted. And I thought, what the hell are we doing with these awful people? I only liked being with the masters because they knew something, you know.
But that explains something. It doesn't. I think you're just innately gregarious, would you say? You're like a Labrador.
Yes, I hate Labradors.
But you are like a Labrador in personality. I imagine you jump
more
up
like,
and smile.
I hope I'm more like a Pekingese.
Are they the
nicest dogs in the world?
Are they very gregarious?
Yes.
Oh, right.
They leave the room with people who stroke them. They love them so much.
Oh, really?
They're the most loving dogs there are.
Oh, right.
Anyway. I hate one-man dogs. Awful, what? Common.
Do you?
One-man dogs. I hate that, yeah.
Oh, I love that loyalty.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. it's probably some insecurity in myself.
Not at all.
Obviously.
Most people do. It's just me being difficult.
Yeah, yeah. But your tea towel. Now, this is a thing that I suppose people might say you're a snob, Nikki Haslam. You're a snob. And you did have a standard column in the Evening Standard called How Common?
Yes.
Is that right?
With Simon Mills. We did it for years.
And do you think those mores still apply nowadays? Or do you think we've gone beyond that and that we're now much more open-minded and anything goes and we can use the word toilet, WC, loo or whatever and you don't instantly think, my God, where did they come from?
Well, I think people say toilet. I really mind. I'd mind it enormously.
You do mind
it? It's an ugly word.
Yeah, you see, but that's because of conditioning, isn't it, really?
No, toilet's a horrid word, but toilette is so beautiful, so strange, French.
Mm. So do you on your tea towel, so other things you've said is things like cushions on the bed you don't like. Now,
no.
I would thought you would alienate half the country.
Well, maybe good thing, they shouldn't do it.
they are totally impractical. They look nice, but you have to throw them all off before you get on.
Oh.
Throw them back on in the morning. They are
awful.
Quite ridiculous. Yeah. Now, I'm with you on that one, I have to say. But it is interesting, isn't it? And do you think it's changed on the 85 years? Have you seen that more things are acceptable than they used to be?
Oh, yes, certainly. That has to be true. I mean, civilization gets dumber and dumber.
But it is a good thing in a way, isn't it, that we are more inclusive?
No, I think it's rather a pity.
You think that exclusivity is good?
I think a certain amount of rarity is nice, if I mean that word. I mean, a sort of having a completely different opinion. Just not being run-of-the-mill, I think, is incredibly important. And not taking your ideas from somebody else or a magazine or whatever.
Yeah.
I think individualism is what I'm after.
Yeah, I totally agree there. Because we're all afraid of offending people nowadays,
yeah.
Aren't they? You can
yeah.
call them wrong thing and it's becoming more and more difficult to know what is the right thing. And so we skim around on the surface like water boatmen and we don't come out and say what we think.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with you there. But that's why I find your list of what you should and shouldn't do slightly because it... If
it's
you
not,
say
it's
the wrong thing, you're alienating
but
someone.
But the thing is, it's not really what you should and shouldn't do. It's a different thing. It's something that sort of gets in under one's skin and annoys one. That's what those commons are.
Yeah.
They're things that... They're clichés that everybody thinks they've got to live by or assimilate. And they're not really... You can say anything. Of course you can. You can say toilet if you... don't know, or whatever, but it's just there's a kind of moire of knowing what's prettier.
Right.
I'm trying to say really.
Now my mother used to instill this into me, and if we did ever use the word what, toilet, settee, we'd get slapped round the ear, and we always made us laugh really because we.
But a settee is a specific thing.
Not a sofa. Well, it's different from a sofa.
They're different.
Oh, right, I didn't realise that.
Oh,
I didn't think she realised that.
Sofas were upholstered. They came from Turkey.
Yes.
I mean, all furniture had... do you know what a cabaret really is?
No.
It's called that because originally they were the nightstand beside beds in France. A cabaret, you put your things on. So it was something for night. Something, therefore, that happened at night. And it gradually became... an event at night, but it's a night table in France is a cabaret.
Oh, right. And so, what is a settee then?
Settee usually wood framed.
And then Heppel, it's okay to Heppel, use that
Heppel,
word.
Heppelwhite did settees.
Right. Thank you very much for that.
It's usually a wood frame sofa as a settee.
Right. Thank you for that. So, on to gardening. And obviously, that's how I first met you, I think, when we were talking about gardens, maybe for the Telegraph or something. But your parents had a wonderful garden at 100 House. And the house was designed by Clough Williams Ellis of Port Mary.
Well, the house was added to. It was William and Mary, perfect and Mary house.
Yes.
And Clough did the alterations, the additions. And Cecil Pinsent, the great gardener, did the gardens. And a man called Geoffrey Scott, who was my father's cousin, did the interior design, well, the furnishings. And they were the same team that had worked for Berenson at Itati. And also that La Foce, that famous garden in Italy. And my father lived in Rome, at the embassy.
Right. And so Cecil Pinsent, I mean, he was an architect that trained in Italy, wasn't he? So that whole...
But he was a garden architect. Only.
Oh, I thought he was an architect. I thought he trained as an architect initially.
Well, maybe you know better than I do. I've always known him as a garden designer.
Oh, right.
It was certainly Geoffrey Scott who was the architect side of that partnership.
Right, but Cecil Pinsent had very strong outline and bones to the garden.
Yeah, very.
And I did think that your house that you then went on to do, the lovely hunting lodge, you went to live in the hunting lodge, didn't you? And that... Again, that seemed to have those very strong structural lines.
That was John Fowler, really. I think Nancy Lancaster, she probably planned that garden. But that's basically a Dutch garden. It's that sort of Dutch form of planting, and the flower bed's hidden.
Yeah.
So then you suddenly come upon them.
And it was a lovely layout, wasn't it?
Oh,
really
wonderful!
Stunning.
Yeah, and a tiny space. But you know, it was eight times the size we're sitting in.
But it felt very spacious, very...
It was a wonderful garden.
And just well-proportioned spaces, very clean lines.
Yeah.
And I always think, when I think of your designs outside, because you do influence people on the outside spaces
yes.
Definitely. And you always seem to take that approach. But back to John Fowler. So he fascinated me. So he was a business partner of Nancy Lancaster, who did Haseley Court. I remember meeting Nancy Lancaster at Haseley Court in the 60s. And you knew both the Nancys, Lancaster and Nancy Astor, did you?
I just knew Nancy Astor. He was a friend of my father's, because they were both Christian scientists. So I met Nancy that way. But I knew they were both, did you say? Christian scientists.
I didn't know that. Mm.
She was a rabid Christian scientist.
So just put them in a nutshell, what a Christian scientist is?
It's the belief that the body will heal itself, basically.
Oh, right.
And Nancy Lancaster... Nancy Astor was a very violent, not violent, wrong word, but great believer in that. But I knew her children, Bill and Michael and all the young Astors.
Yes. But Nancy Lancaster had obviously a big influence on design with the Colfax and Fowler.
Oh, yes. She invented interior design in England, I think.
Yeah, and it was...
I mean, it was usually Americans who did that kind of thing, by the way. Americans did all the great work.
And she had a lot of American influence, didn't she?
She was American.
She was American. Oh, yeah. And you could really see it in her. I met her when she'd moved to the lodge at Haseley Court. Was it the lodge or the stables?
Yeah,
or whatever
stables,
it was?
Yeah.
Beautifully inside. And really...
Well, those tables with the pyramids on them. Do you remember?
Oh, I don't remember that.
She had sort of tables that roses climbed on, and then trellis work pyramids on the tables. They were amazing.
Oh, I don't remember those at all. But that her style now is very much in vogue at the moment, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Very much.
Yeah.
And
decoration-wise.
Yes.
Yes. Well,
and fabric-wise, don't you think?
Yes. Well, it's coming back, I think.
Yeah. But what I love about you, I remember when we talked some time back about how you design a garden, you always like to bring the inside out and the outside in. So tell me some of your ways that you
do
that.
Well, I think what people don't realise, when you're decorating a house, is how much the outside influences it. And that's why it's very hard to use yellow in this country, because the green reflects and makes all yellows go green. It's a very unused colour.
Well, except the King has yellow benches at Highgrove, doesn't he? And
Yellow accents is fine, but it's rooms inside reflecting what's outside.
Right.
If you put a bit of red paper down the room, you'll see the walls will go slightly different colours. People don't realise about reflections.
So if you rendered, we're sitting in front of a lovely, your house, which is a lovely lodge with ashlar stone, and you've got pale green doors. If you rendered this, you wouldn't, because it's beautiful ashlar stone, in a yellow colour, you would say that it would turn slightly greenish. Is that
yes,
what you're inferring?
Yes, yellow does, if you painted this yellow, it would look very green. But that's right. Why they use yellow in Russia and Scandinavia, because there's not so much green, and there's a lot of white snow, and that looks wonderful. And yellow works in America too, oddly enough. There's some kind of light, especially the eastern seaboard, that works with yellow. It's funny, there's very different lights in America to here.
Yeah, because when you see these rendered villages like Port Marion, like in Suffolk,
yeah,
you do see a lot of yellow, your ochres, yellow ochre, yeah, a lot, don't you?
Well, there's usually a reason for them.
Yeah.
That sort of rust colour that Fowler used a lot indoors, sort of pinky, it's the colour of elastoplast, exactly, if we want to match it.
It's almost like a pale terracotta, wasn't
it? Yes, pale, but much browner than you think.
Yeah.
That was originally on the outside of buildings to keep the flies outside.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
I mean, everything has a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it's fashion, though, which is less of a reason. It's just that people love it.
Yes, it
would
does.
You say?
Yeah.
So other things are bringing inside, like you might bring an old garden bench in the hall.
Oh, I love, it's funny. Garden furniture looks wonderful indoors, and indoor furniture looks horrible out of doors.
I do remember.
It's the most extraordinary thing. You see those terrible sets of sofas and chairs all upholstered for outdoor. They look so awful.
But they are highly usable, aren't they? Because
I hate being usable.
So you would never have an outdoor sofa?
No.
Even if it was with a fabric that was waterproof and drainable. But
only place you could use outdoor fabric is around a swimming pool. You know, the covers of the chaise lounge.
So I have to say, though, since I have got outdoor sofas, sorry, your hair's now standing on end. but whereas we never sat in the garden, now you can sit comfortably and read a newspaper. It changes your life.
Yeah, but how long for? 10 minutes at a time in this country.
No. I'm sorry. We'll have a lunch or something and we'll lounge.
Yeah, you can do it.
Well,
I think tables are different. Dining out is very different.
But then afterwards,
I think lounging outside is pretty common.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nikki.
Yeah.
I am so sorry. I won't budge on that one because I love it. And I do think fabrics have moved on so much.
They are,
and
the design, there are some wonderful new ones. Yeah,
yeah, and water can go right through them, and they're made of plastic bottles, recycled, and they drain.
That's marvellous.
And vermin don't eat them.
Yeah.
But I think the important thing is that the sofas have to look good cushionless through the winter.
Yes.
So that when they're naked, they still look good. Because you don't really want to bring them in and out.
No,
but
exactly.
I think it
depends sort of on the garden, doesn't it? I mean,
yes.
If you've got a slightly modern feel to a garden, you could have that sort of sofa thing going. But if it's an 18th century garden, it just looks bad.
Even if they're the sort of Lloyd Loom look, you don't find that appropriate with cushions on sofas in that ilk.
I don't. Lloyd. Well, I don't know.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. I won't push it. Don't worry. what about trellis? Trellis.
Love trellis.
In wallpapers and kitchens, trellis outside.
Trellis is one of the great patterns of all time.
Yeah. And there's so many variants on it.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And lots of finials and things. Yeah. You can make it as fancy or low-key. Yeah. You can change the colour and be strong with colour because it's just bits, not a solid amount.
And it's going to rain.
So we've just moved inside, but we can still see your lovely garden as it started to have an April shower. But we love trellis and bowl flowers on fabrics and wallpaper.
Yes,
so you like the mingling of the outside
absolutely.
And the inside. Any other tips in that direction?
Well, I don't think one should mingle everything. I don't think one should be stuck in
Vogue. Yes,
in a Vogue, exactly.
Right. Okay. I obviously you've just got this sort of innate creative streak, haven't you? I remember. From when you were writing something, you were saying with the Lysett Greens, and you described their house as a facade propped up by a magnolia tree with blossoms the size of Ascot hats.
Yes.
A wonderful description there. And when you were staying there, I think you were staying for Christmas or something, you made two huge console tables for their hall. So you got some massive oak trunks, and then you did a feather faux marble planks for the top. Do you remember that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, oh, I'd love a guest like that. So you came and transformed this wonderful space. And so you'd done that sort of thing before. You just see what you've got and you knock it up.
Yes, I love handicrafts, really. It's my favorite thing.
And it makes something so individual, doesn't it? Because when you go through a catalogue or you order from a shop, you know 6 million other people have got it, but when it's your own, it's totally your own. And also the fact that it hasn't cost £6 million, it always appeals to me. You and I have one thing in common. We both have a dreadful habit, the eBay habit.
Yes, love eBay.
What's the best bargain you've ever had on eBay?
I don't know, I can't think. The best bargain on eBay, well, that deer in the garden, I think I got on eBay. I certainly looked on eBay for things like that, and in the end I found this man in Germany who made them.
It's a beautiful deer that's lying down with his antlers up.
Silvered antlers.
And you look straight from your main living space onto the deer. And it makes a garden, doesn't it?
There's another one there too, in the woods.
Ah, and that's from the same source?
No, that came from a jug shop near here in Bloxham. Mm.
So, no, it is wonderful hunting, I have to say. I love finding great stuff from eBay.
Because there are no antique shops left, really, anymore. We used to be able to find all that stuff in antique shops. They just don't exist anymore. All those dealers now on eBay, they comb the antique shop, and it all goes to their shop.
I was at the Newark's Antique Fair. What do you know? The Newark's Antique Fair.
No.
There, so like every other month on the last first weekend or something.
Is it wonderful?
And there's like thousands of stalls from all over the world, actually. But they were getting really cross because people were going there, photographing items, putting it up on eBay. And they, if they got a seller, they'd sell it on eBay and then come back and buy it.
Yeah.
And really naughty.
That is naughty, yes.
Yeah, very naughty. And so they were very cautious about people photographing their stuff.
Yeah.
But obviously on the internet, you've got the world as your market, as opposed to just whoever's popping into your shop.
Yeah, there's a lot of ripping off going on.
Copying, ripping off.
Yeah.
And there is a problem. I mean, with this lovely estate fencing, which everybody seems to have, you can get rip-offs from China that in heavy snowfall will just buckle.
Yeah.
But they are maybe a tenth of the price of...
Exactly.
Yeah, no, you have to watch it. I quite agree. I love other things that you've mentioned, that food tastes better outside.
It does, doesn't it?
Mm. Why is it? Is it you're more relaxed?
It's just something so lovely about being outside. Wherever, if it's hot or cold, or not well cold, you're not really outside, it's cold. But there's something so nice about eating en plein air. It makes such a difference to, I mean, it makes people's spirits rise, so the food hardly matters, really.
Mm. No, I quite agree. I always think I'm more relaxed outside. I'm sure the fresh air does something to you rather than the inside environment. And when we're recording, like when it's an outside recording, I always think it's so much nicer than when we're in a hall or something like that. No, I love it. And you're not... Another thing you don't like are these modern outdoor heaters.
Oh.
Or do you? Maybe I'm wrong there.
It depends if I need them.
I read that you'd rather have flickering frames, old rugs and barbers rather than sort of gas heaters.
Yeah, I would really,
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I have to say, you can turn it on with a switch, and if you're in London, you get back.
Yeah.
It's nice to be extended
I can
quickly.
See that point, but as I say, they just look so ugly. That's the truth, those heaters.
Yeah, a lot of them do. I agree. But your terrace has got a really eclectic mix of furniture there, which is one of your things, isn't it? You wouldn't buy a set, particularly.
No, well, they're all bits I've picked up in various places. The chairs came from a hotel that Carol Bamford was going to read. They chucked them all out. And I said, can I have four of those chairs? And she sweetly said yes.
Oh,
and I
lovely.
Painted them grey.
Mm.
And the two big consoles I found in an antique shop in Chipping Norton.
Right.
But then, I mean, people said, putting those outside, are you mad? I love that look of those.
But they're metal, those console tables, aren't they? So why did they say putting them outside? Because they thought they were too good.
They're meant to be indoor tubs.
Oh, I see. But they're actually quite workable outside. Yeah,
they look wonderful outside.
Yeah, really nice. So it's got a... Your look has, would you, isn't glamour's the wrong word, sophistication, what? How would you describe your look?
Well, I hope there's a bit of glamour to it, because I quite like glamour.
Right.
I hope there's a bit of sort of Hollywood in it too, and set decoration, and a bit, it's not stuffy.
Yeah, it's got personality. Yeah, and it's got a very definite feel.
Yeah.
And I sometimes think of you similar to David Hicks, or do you find that not good?
I love David Hicks. He's a sweet man. I adored him.
He did great garden.
Yeah, wonderful. Mm. Well, and he adored the hunting. He'd always bring people to the hunting lodge to see. It was the ideal garden, he thought.
Ah. So when I first met David Hicks, I was hugely impressed with his garden that he did, Breitling something or other. Yeah. And he had a very clever way.
Which was Salome.
Sorry?
Bridgewell Salome.
Yes, right.
Bridgewell Lodge.
Salome, yeah. That's right. And he would open his garden and attract lots of American tourists to see it. And then he would fill his book with commissions for America. And he said he used to charge £10,000 a pop for him to fly over there on Concorde, help them with their garden and come back. And I thought that was such a simple business model.
Exactly. He was genius.
So he was a businessman as well as a very good designer.
Well, he didn't make any money.
Didn't he? I thought he did. Well, maybe not you'd call serious money.
I don't think decorators did make money in those days. Now decorators do make money. American decorators make a lot of money. French decorators do. And some English do. But the old days, there was no branding. That made all the difference. When I started, I never thought of doing a line of candles or, you know, it was a completely unknown idea.
But so you're saying that they only make the money when branding came in, that they didn't
That's what makes your money. I like fashion. The only thing that makes money is sunglasses for Dior.
Really?
Yeah, Dior don't make any money at all as a couturier.
I knew that the fashion people have it hard. It's really tough to forge your way in fashion.
No, scent and sunglasses and accessories, bags.
But when you say money, you're talking mega bucks. But I think they can make a decent wicket. But I think designers tend to be, on the whole, not good businessmen. Would you agree with that?
Well, yes, I think that's true, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, certainly fall into that category myself.
I'm afraid it's true by myself.
Yeah. You've also used grey a lot, don't you? Do you still use smooth grey?
I love grey, yeah. Well, grey and mauve.
So like the sort of aubergine mauve or the grainy mauve, like you have in south
lilac,
of France?
Lilac.
Right. So in that colour. So in the south of France, you see a lot of the doors and shutters in that sort of faded oaky mauve colour, violet colour, isn't it? But it's very distressed colour.
Yeah. That's my favourite colour.
How do you make that finish on wood? How do you get it?
I suppose you just have to go on and on and on until you get it right.
Mm.
I mean,
because some people say they put tarps and they add a bit of mauve and a bit of white and a bit of this and,
I'm
and
sure
put
that's
it on
true.
As a stain.
I
mean, yeah.
One does do it. One's trial and error.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that colour. We've done the boarding on our house that colour and I use that shade.
Where do you live?
We live up near Stamford, so we're on the northern edge of the Cotswolds. So it's all the stone houses, stone roofs and things like that, but we're flatter than you are here.
Yeah.
What are your favourite plants?
Ooh.
That you use here, you've got pelargoniums, you've got roses in tubs, which interests me. They must be hard work in small pots.
I've just done nothing to them at all. No. I clipped them back and they seem to be coming out again.
Mm.
And those are a stinking iris I picked out of the woods.
Yes.
Which I love.
Iris foetidissima. There's one, it survives anywhere. Doesn't it? But there's a version with a yellowier flower than that, because that's got a very grey, dirty knicker colour to the flower, hasn't it?
I rather love that sort of non-colour.
Ah, there's a yellower version of Vitadisma, which I've got, but whether it seeds into the native one or whether it stays yellow...
I just dug them up from the wood there and put them in.
Oh, lovely, yeah. I could have bought you a shed load more too. And also, I see you've got artificial flowers in the house.
Yes, I adore artificial flowers.
Because they're easy?
Not because they're easy, because I think they're so beautiful, among other things. I mean, if they're well made, they look amazing. As I say, the 18th century worshipped artificial flowers.
And how did they make them?
They made them of paper, they made them of silk, they made them of metal, incredible metal artificial flowers. And the great China ones made in France, at Versailles, which are now, there's about three of them left, the great China, white China tulips and things that were made for Madame de Pompadour.
Amazing.
They're extraordinary works of art.
So you've got some cherry blossom there in yours, artificial cherry blossom. So will you...
Isn't it apple?
I think it's... Oh, maybe it's apple. Maybe it's apple. It's just, the leaf is just unfurling.
Well, the leaf, I've real. I've just put them in. They're from
That's what confused me. Yeah. I see. Yeah. That's it's mixing up. It's mixing them up.
And it fooled you.
And it fooled me. But I have got myopia, I have to say. I have had new corneas, whatever you call it. But so I am better, but I'm not 100%.
And I put fake geraniums in the geraniums. Those geraniums are fake.
They are brilliant. They are very good.
The flowers, the plants are real, but the flowers are fake.
That is very clever.
I've got a whole... I meant to do more for you, but I didn't get enough time.
That is a very clever idea, because they will, indoors, they will stop flowering if they have a low light level. But by adding in the leaves, keeping the leaves and adding in the flowers, you've got that wonderful look. It's good the way they all go to the light, that because they're real, that's
well,
what makes them look...
that round. But
yes, right. So that's a really nice idea.
But a calf gave me a lot of her grand geraniums, but they don't really like being indoors much, those grand geraniums, those... scented ones.
She brings them in and out a lot, doesn't she? Yeah. She brings them in the house for the weekend when people are coming and back out. I wouldn't have the time to do that.
Exactly.
So I prefer them outside. But as your garden floods in here through the French windows, through the windows. So your garden is so prevalent, you don't need to bring too much in, do you? Because it's just floods in, which is really nice. So, Nicky, what have you got planned for the next 5 years?
More writing.
Yeah. What are you writing on? Not a novel, but memoirs?
I do want to do more memoirs if I could ever get around to it. I've just got to keep making notes.
Yes.
Thinking I must put that in a memoir.
And have you got a publisher who chivers you along?
No, but I could get one easy enough. I mean, my old publishers want a second volume.
Oh, right, for your memoirs?
Yeah.
That is, why don't you do that?
Well... partly because the second half of one's life is not as thrilling as the first half was.
But you have a different perspective on it.
Yes, it's hard to write philosophically as opposed to writing about excitements.
But I find that more interesting in a way. Because your first memoirs is wham, bam, packed full of event after event after event. And I almost would like you to slow down and to hear your look back on things.
Well, I thought what I might do is sort of revisit that book and add bits to it, or take bits out and expand on various things. I'm not sure yet what it'll be, but I do a lot of reviewing. That's what I like doing, reviewing books.
It's quite hard work. You have to read a lot of books, don't you?
That one's 550 pages.
How long will that take
to
read?
With no index.
And that one being called...
Christopher Isherwood's
Inside Out. And how long will that take you to read?
Well, I've got to have it done. I've sort of read it. I skim it quite well.
Yeah.
And then mark it up. And then, but I haven't read it fully yet. Mm. But I did that one. I did Queen Victoria's Diaries. Not Diaries there.
Oh, really?
That's in the Current Oldie, the review of that.
right. Queen Victoria and her Prime Ministers, A Personal History. Anne Somerset.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a wonderful
book.
It's a wonderful book. Anne is a great, great writer, and she's done it brilliantly. You wouldn't think you'd get anything new out of Queen Victoria, and she's found so much that's fascinating. Yeah.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah. That will be a good read. Yeah. So, Nicky, it's been lovely to chat to you. I always bring my guest a wee present.
Oh, how wonderful.
And
I hope it's a plant.
No, it's not. I've got you a ticket to press day at Chelsea.
Oh, that's the best present you could possibly...
I've got a wee string attached to it, a small string attached to it, because I would like to get your view on the gardens there.
Oh, yes, that'll be fun.
Because, they've changed so much.
Do we walk around together and go, yeah?
Yeah, we'll walk around together and we'll say, I love that, I hate that, or what about that? Or would you do that?
Yes,
and
of course.
I think that would be fascinating.
Great.
And I'll get you a glass of champagne.
You might have got me a wheelchair, too.
No,
can't walk very far.
You won't need that, I tell you. Anyway, it's lovely to see. I can't believe that you are your age. I have to say, if I had to put an age on you, I would put you at the tail end of 50s.
Really?
You must give me your skin secrets,
Nikki.
Oh,
that's wonderful. That's pretty good.
But I think it's from inside as well. You have this joie de vivre in spades, haven't you?
Yes, I do have joie de vivre.
In spades, which you were born with, perhaps. I don't know. Lack of the genes.
I think because of being ill, I was sort of forced myself to have it.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't battered out of me when I was young. I think joie de vivre can be knocked out of children quite quickly, and then they become boring bankers. You know what I mean?
Yes, only too well. Yeah. Well, lovely. Thank you very much, and we'll meet again
Andy
in Chelsea.
Lovely. Right. Thank you, Bunny. It was wonderful. And thank you, Unity, for being such a wonderful controller of this conversation.